Janeway, Spock, Spear, Locus, Action, Very Weird, Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons, and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hot, Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher Batliff, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kim Peck's at, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series,
well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is February 15th, 2024. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That means we are live. That means you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talkin' right now, 646-668-2433. And you're going to want to do that because we're going to be talking about Section 31. That's right. The Oscar-winning Michelle Yeoh is going to be back as Emperor Georgiou in her own made-for-movie television series, which will be exclusively on Paramount+. And we're going to be talking about the history of Section 31, some of what we've heard about the movie, and what we think, what we'd like to see in the movie, where we think it might take place and what we think it might be about. So if you're interested in Section 31, then this is definitely, definitely your show. But wait, there's more. We also have our Star Trek birthdays. We have our Star Trek news, and we're going to do our fan shout out. So we have a lot to get to. Before we get rolling, though, I want to introduce you guys to my awesome, always incredible Trek experts. And we'll start out with Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing today, Charles?
I'm doing all right. We're getting some mild weather now, so things are looking up. Looking forward to talking more Trek.
Trek talking is always fun. And now we're going to swing that camera all the way out to Portland, where I have my triple play, starting out with David the Donut Guy. How you doing, David?
Well, Section 31 might be listening, but that's good news for us, because more audience, right?
That's right. We like Section 31 with the black badges. And we also have with us our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I love Section 31, and I have no quarrels with them. They are a great organization.
Were you hired by them? You sounded a little,
Yes, they are.
Total programmed.
Like the Stepford Wives. And we also have with us our very own Paul the Toy Guy. How you doing, Paul?
You know, man, I'm good. And here's the thing, right? Okay, I love and support and endorse autonomous intelligence and counterintelligence agencies without question. But it's really hard to take Section 31 seriously. Do you know why? Because there's never been a Section 31 toy or action figure made ever. So from my perspective, it's really kind of like they don't even exist. I mean, where's the evidence that they've even done anything other than sit on their ass in some cubicle? I see none. So I think we have a lot to unpack, gentlemen, would be my call. And until I see, like, a Section 31 figure in a plastic clamshell in Target, I cannot really get Maybe Philippa Georgiou can be the first if we cross our fingers right. Somebody ever picks up that pesky license.
They never made a Sloan from Deep Space Nine?
Negative.
Wow. Okay.
It was only available to Section 31 units.
Yeah, they were only released through Taco Bell at a limited promotion, but it was very unsuccessful. And, what can I tell you? It just didn't catch on. So
they must have made a Malcolm from Enterprise. He was in Section 31.
I guess,
Malcolm
but he
Reed.
Doesn't really have the uniform, right? Unless I see you in your, like, your black fascist, you know. I mean, they're supposed to evoke fascism, right? That's the whole thing with their regalia. So, and Malcolm's kind of a cuddly teddy bear. He's not really as – he doesn't really represent the kind of, you know, cloak and dagger mindset that Section 31 is meant to evoke. And I'm getting way ahead of myself.
You're getting way ahead of you. You better stop there, brother.
Right.
This is the beating.
I'm sorry. I have a special medical condition.
He's trying to prime the audience and get them to call in with their opinion.
Exactly. Well, one thing we do know about Section 31.
Let's get this party started right now. Why are we there? Let's go.
Good. One thing we know about Section 31, it's all a lie.
It's a lie. It never happened. So before we get rolling with our Section 31 conversation, you guys can go and visit trektalking.com, and there's all kinds of great stuff there, including all of our podcasts. You can find them all there at trektalking.com, and there's all kinds of blogs and fun stuff that you can check out while you're there. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the Facebook emblem. You just click on that, and boom, it magically takes you to our Facebook page. Why do you want to go to our Facebook page? Well, I'm going to tell you why. Because when you get there, you're going to see pinned at the top of the page to live long and prosper and the question, where are you listening from? And all you need to do is go there and tell us. I'm going to try to get my attention, though. And Eric, how do people get my attention on the Facebook page with over 217,000 followers?
Well, the best way to do it is to send you a private message with lurid pictures. But if that doesn't work, then you can simply put lots and lots of emojis next to your post. And that should pretty much take care of it, because Jim's kind of like a toddler. He's, you know, he's attracted by lots and lots of colors and little things that he wants to put in his mouth.
That's right.
Or send, you know, just leave a message with your bank routing number and account number. That works, too.
Yeah, I think that would be fine. Yeah.
Also, another thing would work is a Section 31 wanted for hire.
Yeah, that'll work, too.
You could suddenly find yourself a top fan. I mean, it could happen, right? Just a few little nine digits in a row, and that's all it takes.
You never can tell. And as an added bonus, while you're at our TrekTalking.com page, in the bottom right-hand corner, there's a little blue talkback mic. You can click on that mic, and you have 2 minutes to leave us a message, and I guarantee you that will make you a top fan. So there's several ways that you can get on our fan list. And once you do that, you want to look for a heart next to your comment from yours truly, Uncle Jim. And then you want to tune into the future podcast, because you are going to be immortalized like these lucky fans that we're about to mention. Eric, you want to get us started with our fan shout-outs?
I absolutely do. Our very first fan shout-out this week goes out to Chris Corzo Verone, who is saying hello to us from the beautiful Bavarian region of Germany in the city of Augsburg. Live long and prosper, Chris says to us, and gives us the same hand gesture. I say peace and long life to you. And thank you so much for checking in with us and for representing Trek Talking out there in Germany. We really appreciate lots of supporters in Germany for Trek Talking. And maybe you know some. And if you don't, pass the link along to a friend. Thank you so much for saying hi. Also saying hello this week to Dario Hernan Garcia, who's saying hello to us from Buenos Aires, of course, in the beautiful country of Argentina, sending us the little Argentinian flag emoji there with the golden sun. Hello to you, Dario, and kapla to you and all of your exploits down there in that amazing country. Hello this week to Hen Seegers, who's saying hello to us from the Netherlands, South Holland, in the great city of Valkenburg. And I have to tell you that, and you are not the first person to say hello to us from Valkenburg. I know, because I've looked up that little portion of the Netherlands on the map before. And we've had three or four folks from your region say hello to us. And I double-checked, it's not you saying hello over and over again. So pretty cool. There's this little contingent of Trek Talking listeners in that very kind of, not remote, but just kind of separated region of Holland. So thank you so much for supporting us and for saying hello. And we send lots of love out to you. And finally on my list, we're saying hello this week to Bera Yomanov, who's saying hello to us for Brno in the Czech Republic. And this one You know, Barra, you put in the extra effort. You got a smiley face, a live long and prosper, and two check flags. That'll get her done. Hello to you, and thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Charles, take it away, brother.
Thank you very much, Eric. Let's first do a warm welcome to Dorothy Lacey Kurtz from suburban Philadelphia. And then I got some top fans. Top fan Kenneth Quintos from the USA, Southern New Jersey. Welcome, Kenneth. And a welcome to Mary Curtis from Salt Lake City, Utah. How's the weather up there in Salt Lake? And then, wow, first time I think I've ever really seen emojis on my post. A top fan from Luis Onya, who gives me four big hand claps and says they're in the deep in the heart of Texas.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Man, I don't get to get you to get emojis, so wow. David, after that excitement, what's on your list?
All right, yeah, so I got a top fan here from Jeff Byrne from Denver, Colorado. Sorry if I butchered the last name there. I think it's Byrne? Byrne? I don't know.
Byrne. Byrne.
Something.
Feel the burn, baby.
All right, and next one is Brenda Hargrove Jenkins from Spokane, Washington, USA. And next on my list is Walter Distra from Bellingham, Washington, USA. Got another top fan from Miami, Florida, USA. And saying hello to Peter Leon. And Paul, who's on your list?
Thanks, David. First of all, I'd like to give a mighty hello to our good friend Farnaz Piep from Tehran in Iran, where Star Trek and Mr. Spock have proven to be very popular, according to Farnaz, which should be no surprise. It's well known that due to Iran's cultural identity being very inextricably linked to its mythology and many heroic and fantastical stories, that science fiction is very popular in that country. Very, very popular. A lot of people don't realize it, but I think Star Trek quite much more so even than Star Wars in that particular country. So it's great to hear from you, Farnaz, and thanks for reminding us that that love of Star Trek is a global phenomenon. We all have those things in common, which is great. I'd like to say hello also to a great fan of ours in Stupava, Czech Republic. Flag flying proudly, Radim Block is saying hello with the Live Long and Prosper signatory right there next to the Czech flag. So great to hear from you, Radim. Thank you for being a fan, and thanks for listening to our show. One of the most amazing places in the universe, a longtime home for legendary science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke, Colombo, Sri Lanka. And we're saying hello to our friend Amila Panchami Dadalaj Pereira. Hello, Amila. It is great to hear from you. You are in a place that is steeped with great science fiction significance. Amazing part of the world, very utopian in some places. So a lot of great things happening there. A beautiful country I would love to be able to visit someday myself. And finally for me, it is time to go back over to the continent and say hello to top fan Magdalena Joost from Kielce, Poland, with the flag flying right alongside there. Great to hear from you, Magdalena. I hope you are hunkering in tonight, wherever you may be there in Kielce, for an evening of perhaps Star Trek watching, old reruns, and checking out our wonderful podcast. So great to hear from you. Thanks for being a top fan and supporting our show and all things from the UFP. Take it away, Uncle Jim.
Well, I've got a bunch of top fans as well, and you guys might be wondering, what is all this top fan stuff? Well, it's funny you should ask. Well, actually, I asked, but it doesn't matter. When you go to our Facebook page, I post all kinds of questions on there. Like, for instance, there's one up there right now asking you to score the TOS episode, The Empath, on a scale of 1 to 10. So you go and you know, 10 is the best, remember. And you go and you answer that question. And the more that you interact with our Facebook page and answer questions and fill out polls, the more points that you get. I'm not sure how many points you have to get when for Facebook to give you that badge, but you earn those badges by interacting with us on our Facebook page. So that's how you become a top fan. That just means that you're interacting with us a lot on Facebook. So with that being said, I want to say hello, thank you, and kapla to top fan Ann Boudreaux, who's listening to us right now in Northern Vermont, USA. That's right, hometown girl, Northern Vermont. I'm in Central Vermont, so maybe up in Burlington, maybe Essex Junction, maybe. But thank you for listening, Ann. We also have another top fan, Catherine Hyla, who's listening to us in New Jersey, U.S. of A. And oh my God, another top fan. Does it ever end? We want to say Kaplan, thank you to Michael E. Sapita. So I can't read that. Speedall, who's listening to us in Queens, New York, U.S. of A. Thank you so much. And last but not least, we want to say thank you and kapla to Joanne Icono Brewing, who's listening to us in New York. Don't know where, somewhere in New York. Elusive like Bigfoot, I suppose. All right, guys, so that finishes up our fan shout-outs. If you'd like to be featured on a fan shout-out, head over to our Facebook page. It's really simple, painless, and fun. All right, guys. We're going to talk about Section 31 right now, and you can give us a call at 646-668-2433 if you'd like to join into the conversation. I did a little bit of research on Section 31 here. Michelle Yeoh's Section 31 movie is entered production. It's worth revisiting everything known about Starfleet's top secret organization. The Star Trek Discovery spinoff movie will see Emperor Philippa Georgiou, played by the Oscar-winning Michelle Yeoh, join Section 31, presumably after being returned to the 23rd century by the Guardian of Forever, Carl. I just love that name for the Guardian, Carl. So anyways, Carl sends her back. Except for Yeoh, Star Trek Section 31 cast is all new to the franchise, allowing the movie to reveal more about Starfleet's secretive organization. Section 31 originated in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It was introduced in Season 6, Episode 18, Episode Inquisition. The covert agency attempted to recruit Dr. Julian Bashir as a member of Section 31, but he refused. Bashir's commitment to exposing the controversial agency led to Section 31 being deemed a rogue organization in the 24th century. The original Starfleet Charter is where Star Trek's mission statement, to boldly go where no man has gone before, originated. However, it's also where the shadowy intelligence agency got its name. Article 14, Section 31 of the Starfleet Charter made allowances for extraordinary measures to be taken during extreme threats. Star Trek Enterprise revealed that Lieutenant Malcolm Reed had previously served in Section 31 before he was assigned to the Enterprise NX-01. This established that from the very early days of humanity's exploration of the universe, a secret group of intelligence operatives was quietly strategizing responses for potential hostile actions. In the 23rd century, Section 31 experimented with time travel in direct response to the Klingon Empire's temporal experimentation. Perhaps looking to avoid another temporal Cold War, Section 31 hired Federation scientists Gabriel and Mike Burnham to work on the Daedalus Project. Section 31 is an autonomous agency. This allows Starfleet Command to retain plausible deniability for some of Section 31's worst crimes. Some of these crimes include the attempted genocide of the changelings and the framing of an innocent Romulan politician in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It's a fake! There are hints in Star Trek Strange New Worlds that the organization sanctioned the use of biological augmentation during the Klingon War in the form of Dr. Joseph Mbenga's super soldier serum. Captain Christopher Pike was furious at the human cost of Section 31's reckless use of the AI control system Starfleet accepted Pike's criticisms and committed to overhauling the intelligence organization by putting Ash Tyler in charge. While more transparency over Section 31's actions was promised, it's unclear exactly how that was manifested in the 23rd century. Section 31 did not appear in Star Trek TOS, suggesting that they continue to operate in the shadows, despite the assurances to Pike at the end of Star Trek Discovery Season 2. And that's the information
I was able to... Or suggesting that no one had written them yet.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's the information that I was able to dig up on Section 31. And as far as not... I think that Paul's exactly right. It wasn't mentioned on TOS because it hadn't been written yet. In the chronology of Star Trek, they were around during TOS because Discovery takes place before TOS. And so they were around, but they just weren't mentioned because they hadn't been written yet. But
it also hasn't been written yet in the TNG era either during the 90s and 80s.
Well, they were on Deep Space Nine, which kind of happened in the same, you know, time. So I think it's safe to assume that they were around during TNG as well.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, like, the first part of TNG, I don't think they were written in yet.
No. No, they were not.
Yeah, but there's never... David's right, because there's never any reference to them on Next Gen at all. So it's kind of like one of those things you have to just sort of, like when you're looking at a modern art painting, right? You just squint at it and go, yeah, I see it. And so, you know,
well,
Thomas Riker, maybe. I don't know.
Well, yeah, Enterprise and everything came later. So the first time we actually ever heard about Section 31 wasn't until we got to Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Yeah, because aren't we kind of like retconning to assume that it goes back when it's written in modern life?
It's the chronological, like what happened chronologically in real life and then what happened chronologically in the universe.
Right.
It's kind of like saying, like, okay, they invented toothpaste in the 1940s, so, but if somebody goes back in time, then everybody in Neanderthal days would have, of course, brushed their teeth.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know, man.
No, I think it's better than that, Paul, because I actually think that later... No, but seriously, like, I think that later shows have taken pains to try and fit somewhat into it, and one of the things that we should probably talk about, maybe this is where Jim's going, I'm not sure, but is just how Section 31 has changed throughout the years and kind of the role that they've taken in Starfleet, and actually, you know, the Enterprise years were kind of cool because they took that story of Section 31 as it was in Deep Space Nine, and they took it back kind of to its origins and showed how it did start as a, you know, I don't want to say like soldiers, but kind of like secret, but always there type of organization. And like, it was forced to become more transparent over time.
Because initially it was when they first, for Deep Space Nine, right? I mean, it's initially, you know, if you look at like, you know, Ira Stephen Baer, who basically came up with it, and Ronald D. Moore, right? They were looking at it as being a fascist organization, right? Bob Blackman, who was the costume designer back then, he deliberately chose, you know, black leather costumes for Section 31 agents because the whole intent was to have them appear, you know, very fascistic, right? Really dark, severe, hostile looking costumes, right? That was definitely, you know, the whole idea was, you know, they're an organization that isn't constrained by ethics. Everything that comes along with that, you know, that ideal there. So it's interesting to see how different writers have chosen to look at that.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know, even when Deep Space Nine was first coming out and I was just a gentleman in my like early adulthood years, it was pretty transparent to me that Section 31, at least at the time, seemed to be allegory for organizations like the CIA in real life, who, you know, to some degree operate with a certain amount of autonomy. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's checks and balances, but I'm also sure that some of the, you know, sometimes you don't have to go through the checks and balances.
Right.
So I always saw Section 31 as kind of this, like, it's a way, sorry, we're getting into the weeds here, Jim, but like, it's a way for Starfleet to take their purity and their utopianism and their kind of like idealism and still have a rug under which they can sweep all the dirty stuff.
Right. And it all comes from supposedly in late in Section 31, right? I mean,
the extreme measures thing, right?
Yeah, it's like it comes from like a Starfleet charter, Article 14, Section 31, right? That the agents have quoted, right? Says that in times of extreme threat, extraordinary measures can be taken, right? And then you see extraordinary measures being things like Eric's talking about that we would see going on in the real world, mirroring things like preemptive assassinations, sabotaging an enemy's installation, biological or technological warfare, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we're certainly no further away from that stuff now. So it's and we're probably going to see more things like that in the, you know, future we live in currently. So it's an interesting thing to talk about for sure. I mean,
well, in real life, you know, if you had to activate this thing, let's say there's no extreme threat for X number of years, and then all of a sudden extreme threat pops up. It's not like you can create the organization at the moment that it is needed. So that's why these organizations exist in perpetuity, even though technically they're only mandated during times of emergency, because, you know, you can't ramp up quick enough when poop hits the fan, so to speak.
The closest thing would be like the Homeland Security thing that evolved after 9/11, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that came into being pretty quickly, but, you know, but in extreme crisis. But, you know, then it's like the problem is if you create an organization like this, right, and then you find that, okay, now things are calm and we don't need it anymore. These organizations have a habit of wanting to make sure that they preserve themselves and don't go away, and they still get funding, right? They still get everything that they need to operate with impunity. And so a lot of times it's the cliche of putting the toothpaste back in the tube, right? Once you've turned on the murderous robot, how do you shut it off, right? So I think that's the problem the Federation's faced with, right? It's just like they're working the shadows.
You don't actually think that it costs $50 for a hammer and $300 for a toilet seat, do you?
Well,
only in government contracts.
Exactly.
Not so read, much, man, no.
No, but
I had read
somewhere
that Star Trek VI, the assassination attempt in Star Trek VI, was perpetrated by Section 31 as well. I haven't been able to verify that.
Well, that I would argue against that because there were actually motives that were revealed in there that had to do with Admiral Cartwright and that sort of stuff that I think aren't necessarily Section 31 based. We could do a show on that. Let's do a show on that.
Yeah, I mean, one of those.
But yeah, so at any rate, when they're introduced in Deep Space Nine, they're introduced at a time that this extreme threat does exist, right? Because it's the Dominion situation. And so that seems to be consistent with what the Charter says. Okay, some really nasty stuff, like we don't know who's who. This is the time that Section 31 starts to do their thing. And, you know, Luther Sloan was a pretty creepy guy, and I thought he actually – I can't remember that actor's name off the top of my head, but
the great William Sadler.
There we go. And he was just
masterful actor, really, really great.
And fantastic in that role, right? Because the what you are supposed to get out of the organization is what you got out of that character, which is you never know exactly what they're thinking or who they're manipulating. Right? Is it your decision or did they convince you to make that decision? I love that.
Nothing's how it appears at face value, which is great, right? I mean, that's always the best. It's just like I think the way that I think to squeeze the most fun out of Section 31, and I really hope this is what they do with the Michelle Yeoh thing, right? Is it's Star Trek's way of doing a spy genre, right? Of doing not all spies are evil. Sometimes they are up to necessary things that help preserve your way of life, right? And I think it would be really interesting if they explore that in this upcoming movie, right, to show that, okay, there's various factions and various mindsets in Section 31. Some people have great motives for being there because they believe in trying to help the greater good, and other folks are, in it for their own agenda and should not be trusted.
Well, you know what they say, Paul? With extreme responsibility comes extreme power.
Yeah, that's actually true. Yeah. And we know, yeah. I guess we know in terms of who's in this thing. I mean, if you want to start diving into your questions about, like, when does this happen? So we know that Michelle Yeoh is the only one who's returning, supposedly. So that means no Ash Tyler. So we know we're not going back to where we were, right?
Guys, I have a caller on the line.
Oh, cool. Hmm.
Yeah, this is let me see if I can get the phone. You know, sometimes I get these gremlins in this thing and it don't want to work. Hey, J-Dog, can you hear us?
No, I can't hear you.
You can't hear us? Guys, this is my buddy J-Dog. He's up in Albany.
Yes, I hear you. Hi,
good
guys.
Old J-Dog. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things with Section 31, though, is we have to it was really prevalent in Discovery. They had black badges, the whole thing. In fact, the Discovery's call numbers ended in 31. So it really came to light in Discovery and ended with the AI at the end of season two. And then Ash Tyler went to take over. So where did Carl send Emperor Georgiou?
Yeah.
You know, this is the question. Did he send her forward in time or back in time? We don't really know.
To call back.
All right. Catch you later.
In a little bit, okay?
All right. Talk to you later, J-Dog.
Okay.
So where do you think he sent Emperor Georgiou? You think he went?
I wonder
because,
if it's going to be you know, I wonder if it might end up being sometime after Ash Tyler was in control.
Yeah, that could be.
And maybe we'll get to see what he did and she gets to take over from what he did. And maybe that might be how they kind of work him into the script.
That could be. They mention him, but he's not actually appearing.
Right.
Well, you got to figure, I mean, I don't know my Klingon lifespans very well, but I assume they're kind of similar to human lifespans. I don't know, Jim, if you could correct me on that, but let's assume for a moment that Ash Tyler is going to live to be, you know, 80 to 100, maybe 120 years old at the outset. And he's what, in his 30s or 40s now? So, and we're in 2256. So you add 100 years, to 20. So, you know, we can't go all the way to TNG era with Ash Tyler, but we can certainly go into the TOS era and we can go into that little 80 year gap between TOS and TNG and sort of play around in that time zone too. So my guess would be that they would pave a little bit of new territory and probably go, I would like to see them go post TOS to kind of dip into the, you know, the ambassador class days when the Enterprise C was around, what was going on in Starfleet during that time period. I think that could be pretty interesting since it's something that we haven't really seen much of yet. What I hope they don't do is focus on maybe like a TOS era thing where they feel forced to do cameos. Like, I don't care if, you know, Paul Wesley's Kirk shows up in this thing or Spock shows up or any of that kind of stuff. In fact, I'd rather not see them. I'd rather this be a separate thing that has a different story.
Hmm.
Well, all of the actors that they've announced so far, none of them, are, as far as I know, are playing any characters that we've ever seen. They're all new.
Yeah, I know so. That sometimes what they'll do is they'll cameo somebody, right? And then it's known later that they were part of it. So I'm just hoping that they don't feel like they have to do that.
Because they only have what? Let's say 2 hours?
Yeah.
Maybe two and a half.
To tell this whole story. So I think it's going to have to move pretty quick.
It's like a TV movie, right? So,
yeah.
Well, I guess it's on streaming service, so.
Hmm. Well,
what's your speculation, Paul, on timing of this thing?
I would
think
that
probably less than 2 hours.
Oh, sorry. I mean when it is set, like when Georgia gets transported to.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what refresh my memory from the whole Carl Guardian of Forever thing, right? What timeline are we in? Are we in the regular timeline of not the 700 years in the future timeline, are we? Or where are we at?
Yes,
when she
we
gets
were.
Sent. We were. She was.
Yes, we were in the future.
Okay, that's what I could not remember. So you got to figure, just because they're using the Guardian as a device to send her someplace, right? It's not going to be in that same timeline that Discovery's in currently. It's going to be someplace deep in the past, right? And I'm kind of with Eric. I really would like to see us go someplace that we haven't been before. And I think that if my just guess is, I mean, it's tough because a lot of the people that are involved in this show, right, this movie, are vets of Discovery, right? And they're folks who've done a lot of stuff on there, right? Executive producers, writers, directors. The director is Olatunde Osunsanmi, right, who's done a ton of Discovery. So I'm hoping, though, that they give it its own feel so it doesn't necessarily feel like it's beholden to Discovery, right? And I think the best way to do that is to not tell the same kind of story and to go into a different era. Like, you know, like for what Eric said, right? Like the Rachel Garrett era, right? With like the ambassador class stuff. That would be fantastic to me, to see something like that. So it's not really feeling like it's, you know, next to a show that we already know really, really well. It's like if we get something fresh, I am hoping that the mindset here, I mean, it's tough because Michelle Yeoh is super popular, right? To land her for a series is not easy. But I'm kind of hoping that what they're doing is treating this whole thing as like the idea of a experimental pilot. They're calling it a movie, right? But if it gets a great reaction and does well, you know, movies can very suddenly turn into a series, right? So I'm hoping that that's kind of where they're going, is that they have a plan and maybe they even have like kind of a back pocket outline of what a series could look like, but they can't really say that yet and they kind of have to wait and see what the reaction is. But I'm kind of with Eric. I would like something fresh and different, right? And not a lot of existing cameos from Strange New Worlds and stuff. Though I know they're going to be tempted, right? How are they not going to? But I would love to see something new. I would love to see something that makes it feel like a spy movie where there's a lot of jeopardy going on and I don't know who to trust. That, to me, would be great.
So I read a fan theory. These are all fan theories, by the way, because nobody knows anything for real. But where they were going to go is they were going to go to the USS Kelvin, which is in the Prime Universe, and Section 31 was going to try to stop Nero from that whole thing from happening, basically keeping...
Thus erasing the entire Kelvin timeline.
keeping Vulcan from being destroyed.
Wow.
You know.
All I can say is that definitely sounds like a quote-unquote fan theory.
I don't think they'd do that.
Yeah, that to me sounds like somebody who's wishing, somebody who doesn't like the J.J. movies a lot and is doing a lot of, like, you know, let's just call it adolescent wish fulfillments. I don't think we're going there, friends. It's like, you know, I don't think you're going to undo. No one's going to do over just for you, fans. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to do that. I don't think all of Paramount's, you know, many millions of dollars are going to say, oops, we screwed up, and suddenly do a mea culpa on, like, three movies worth of stuff. I don't think so. You know, what would be cool, though, is supposedly we just heard recently that there's, you know, finally a green light going for a new, you know, theatrical feature. We don't really know much about it yet, but it sounds like, you know, ideally, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it, but it sounds like they've got something going on. And wouldn't it be cool if, you know, hand in glove, this was pointing towards something down that road rather than, you know, erasing and obviating all the JJ movies. But this was like kind of a sneak preview of where we're going with this, you know, new as yet, you know, undescribed feature. So I would love that if it kind of, you know, they've got a really neat idea and they bait the hook and give us a little taste of what that next movie could be like. to me, that's, but I don't necessarily think the folks at Paramount are smart enough to pull that off, because they've been shooting themselves in the foot time after time after time over the last few years with things, you know, canceling their best properties, you know, doing all kinds of weird stuff. So I really hope this is a step in the right direction. I want this to succeed badly.
Well, Michelle Yeoh is awesome. So
she's great.
You know,
she has good taste.
She is,
you know,
great.
I'm guessing that she probably had script approval, right? And probably insisted on seeing the script before she signed on. And I don't think she would have signed on if she didn't like the story. Because
I'm going to do some of my own fantasy fan stuff. And I think that Eric and Charles would absolutely just, you would hear me screaming all the way in Portland. Swear to God. If
you went, I know where we're going with this.
And if Lorca makes a reappearance, you'll hear me screaming all the way in Portland.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, we haven't seen Prime Lorca, so.
And clamoring for Prime Lorca ever since Discovery Season 1. They just love Jason Isaacs. And he's been very cryptic and whatnot. But, you know, with Carl, as soon as you involve the Guardian of Forever, all bets are off. And I would absolutely, that's the one cameo that I would absolutely love to see. And if it's only a two-hour movie and he shows up for 2 minutes, I'd go crazy. I mean, I think that's a
smart call, man. I really do. I mean, because he's, you know, if you're talking about, you know, an organization full of weaselly cats who are up to no good, who are spies and stuff, I mean, Jason Isaacs is like your guy, right? He's just terrific.
he's great.
You know, get Lucius Malfoy, right? I mean, it would be great. I mean, and to have that energy there, have him back in whatever version of Lorca we could get. I mean, that's good stuff. I'm gonna now hope that you're right, and that it's not just a cameo, that he's got a decent role.
By the switcheroo theorem of the mirror universe, he should be in the mirror universe, right? So does that mean that they're using Emperor Giorgio's, like, mirror universe knowledge and connections to Carl is sending her not only across time, but perhaps across space to a place where, you know, where she interacts with Prime Lorca? I don't know.
You're not going to start asking us to do math, are you?
I'm just saying, when one goes one way, usually one goes the other
way,
too.
Oh, sounds
like mental abuse to human to me.
I think they should be hiring us to write this.
Let's go back to the end of David Mack's book, if you guys recall, when we had him on the podcast, and he said that they made him write those three pages at the end. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And at the end, Prime Lorca is being held in some type of jail cell in the alternate universe, in the Empire. How do we – I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if Section 31 sends her back to rescue him, and that sets up the new theories that Paul was talking about?
Cool idea.
I mean, you know, Paramount, are you listening?
Or the opening scene is like some kind of prison escape, and it's him escaping.
There you go.
He has to be hunted down because of all of the nefarious things he's capable of doing. I mean, that could be a great setup too. I'm totally with you because I just love that dude. I think Isaacs is just great.
He is awesome. So that's what I would like to see. That's the cameo I want. Jason Isaacs. And I mean, what do you think, Charles? Would you like to see Jason Isaacs make an appearance?
Well, as I just drew in my chat, yes, Star Trek, Section 31, The Search for Lorca.
There you go.
I don't know if we need one dedicated to just Lorca. I'd like to get a better idea of this organization. We know a little bit of detail about this organization. I think I'd love to get a little more about what this organization's really doing, besides the sneakery they were doing with the AI control.
Yeah, they.
So I'm just curious what.
I don't think they're, you know, a lot of fans are like, well, they're anti-Federation, they're evil. But when we saw Emperor Georgiou in season two of Discovery, she wasn't doing anything evil. She was there to save Laurel so that the Klingon Empire wouldn't become destabilized again. I wouldn't call that evil.
Well, let's be clear, Jim. Evil depends on your perspective. So,
yeah.
You know, is Emperor Georgiou evil to the guy who's getting kicked in the face? Yeah. Right? I guess what
yeah,
I'm saying is just remember that Section 31
too.
Is, well, and Section, like, we start to play around with Section 31 and this idea of this clandestine organization, but let's not forget that this is the organization that on at least one occasion has specifically engineered a virus to commit genocide against an entire species. So not only are they willing to go like the extra mile, but they're willing to go all the way. And so if you're going to make a movie about Section 31 and make it interesting, I think you best explore the moral ambiguities involved in that sort of a paradigm, right? And there better be like justified reasons or reasons that things are done and then regret or, you know, a coming to light moment that where a good decision is made or something like that. Somehow they have to take this concept of this dark clandestine organization that's not a bunch of heroes and they have to fit it into a Star Trek context that will be appealing to people. And they've shown that they can do it on a scale here and there with the occasional episode, certainly an entire arc involving Section 31 to some degree in Discovery. But this has got to be – it's only 2 hours. It's got to be a movie. So it's got to be – I don't know that we're going to – I would love to explore the organization. I feel like that takes a show. You know, we're going to get a heist or we're going to get a jailbreak or we're going to get like a one thing that has to happen. And that's what we're going to get because it's a movie.
Now, wait a second. Did Section 31, were they responsible for the changeling virus that created the warping, floating head changelings in Star Trek Picard Season 3 that tortured the changelings? Was that Section 31? I don't remember.
Not that one, but they were the ones who created the original virus in the Deep Space 9 days.
Well,
yeah,
I
think
that
floating
one.
Head was,
yeah.
I think that was the Borg.
Because the six changelings that were captured and tortured on the station there were in Picard Season 3. Was that Section 31 that was doing those experiments on them?
Yeah, that was.
Well, Section 31 had previously done experiments. These might have been ones that escaped their captivity.
Okay. So my question would be, we have seen the most excellent, and I do mean excellent, redemption arc of Emperor Georgiou. You can't say that her redemption arc on Discovery wasn't top-notch. I mean, really. Where Michelle Yeoh, where her character ends up at the end of Discovery versus where she started in the beginning is a complete 180. I mean, she changed completely. So how do we know, I'm just throwing this out there to see if it sticks, how do we know that she's not going to dismantle Section 31 because she doesn't like what's going on there? I mean, that could happen too.
She could.
Right? I mean.
Well, I think she's, if anything, she's more likely to work towards transparency of Section 31 in the way that Ash Tyler already was, because if she dismantles, I mean, I guess it depends on where she goes in time. If she goes forward in time, she might dismantle it. But if she goes back, at least to periods that we know, you know, we know we've got Section 31 during the end of the year, so.
Right. Interesting.
Well, okay. Here's a question to throw to Eric. Let's start from... our ear with Pike up through the Enterprise C. What historical events do we have in that time period and could they get involved with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I'd like to see maybe we know there's some events in there in history. Why not push it towards one of those events that we don't know details, but they know those events are out there.
There you go. Fill in the canon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Kittimer massacres.
Yeah.
There's one of them right there.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm actually kind of wondering.
Let's put together history.
Go ahead, David. I was going to say that, sorry for talking over you, but you were mentioning the whole idea of the situation where they could go that direction, but I'm wondering if they are going to be tying all – I mean, this movie would be the perfect opportunity to get all the franchises tied together. Time travel's involved. They could be using Lorca over and over and over throughout the entire movie, multiple movies, if they can continue. But can you imagine bringing in Enterprise, TOS, all the series together and just, like, go all over the place to try and, like, fix different stuff in the timeline?
I mean, that would be super cool. I guess you'd have to use probably mostly digital sets because they're not going to be able to build a different, like, timeline-themed ship every other week or every – oh, but it's a movie. Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Right.
I don't know if you could have a two-hour movie. I mean, I guess you could.
You would have to use AI to generate, like, Picard as a young person, I suppose, and maybe Archer, of course, but I don't know.
Interesting.
It could go that well, but that's my two cents on it, I suppose.
I mean, I think filling in timeline can – oh, sorry to jump in, Paul, but I was just going to say the one way I think for the Star Trek universe, let's say, let's call it the Star Trek universe, to combat or compete with maybe like the Marvel universe. You know how Marvel's got their whole multiverse thing going on right now? Well,
yeah.
We may not do a multiverse in more than an episode here or there in Star Trek. But, man, what if they had multiple shows that were in different time periods that just started to fill in those time period canons? One that's during that, you know, Rachel Garrett era, and one that does fill in what happened with Ash Tyler, and one that does fill in what happens between Picard and the 32nd century. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Paul?
Oh, the only thing I was going to say is, like, the one, you know, hint that's out there is basically during, like, the press announcement that they did for the movie, right? You know, it's just talking about Georgia, right? And how do they describe the plot? The only thing they say is, tasked with protecting the United Federation of Planets, she must also face the sins of her past. So that's the one kind of hint about maybe something that is past related for her, like where some things that she did that she's got to maybe further redeem herself, or something that she left undone, like a loose end in her past, something like that. So it makes you wonder a little bit, right? So, I mean, I kind of want to go back and watch season two of Discovery. Well, again, because it's a good season. But
now,
just sort of to pay attention to everything she says, right? And what does she say? What are things that she mentions that occurred in her backstory?
Yeah, yeah.
That's something I think would behoove me to check out.
In there, yeah.
Georgia did have the USS Defiant from the Tholian Web.
She did, yes.
She had that because she knew all about the Federation, and she knew everything about it. So she had that ship and access to the databanks and everything in the episode. So she was well aware of the Federation's existence. Because she tells Michael Burnham about it.
Well, Sins of the Past sounds an awful lot like that Lorca subplot we were just talking about. I'm thinking about that.
Lorca would be awesome.
Okay. I was just looking at some of our history. David says we'll integrate some of the series a little bit together. I got a way we can integrate series. We got another incident that came up that we haven't really gotten into. The Cardassian takeover of Bajor.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There's
That's
another
right.
big incident right there.
Which has to occur for Deep Space Nine to make any sense. So she can't undo that. But she could go back to that time period and deal with some story in there.
Exactly, because the only story we ever get from that incident was Kira and O'Brien's time there. But that's all we know.
Hmm. Oh, you mean the Mirror Universe from that time period? Is that what you mean?
No. Oh. O'Brien's known for his battle during the Cardassian War. The Cardassian...
Right. During the war.
Conquer of the war with the Bajor.
Pre-Deep Space Nine, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Pre-Deep Space Nine.
Hmm.
Yeah, then we also, if we're talking about things that we don't know about, it's the Romulan Wars. We know nothing except Stiles' father was in it. You know, we know that. But what do we know about the Romulan Wars?
Nothing. That was supposed to be season 5 of the Enterprise.
Yeah, and it never got that far.
Yeah. Maybe they're going to just redo a season 5 Enterprise.
I'd kill for an NX-01 refit.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. Yeah.
If they start with that theme music, then we know.
We know. I do think Enterprise is deserving of some love. It wouldn't kill me if they somehow worked in some Enterprise there, you know.
That would be nice. I agree with Eric. I would love to see the refit of the NX-01.
No, David, you want to see Tribbles. That's what you want to see.
Oh, come on. What's
Tribbles.
The difference? Okay, fine. The Death Star comes. It's the Star Wars crossover.
The Death Star Tribbles. Dun, 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 dun. Let's see, guys. We have a caller here.
Oh.
Let's see if I can get this thing. Doesn't want to answer there. Come on, there we go. Hello, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
Kablama, brother. It's Ray.
Hey, Ray. What's happening,
Ray? Hey, how you guys doing, man?
Hey, what's happening, Ray?
Yeah, listen. Can I just say something quick, please?
Sure.
Now you heard about the incident, right? I hate to change the subject, but this one really tops this. Now you heard about what happened in Missouri, right?
Yeah.
You can't see, huh?
Yes.
Yo, that was, yo, man, that joke got me crying, yo. Yesterday.
It was tragic for sure.
But sure, I mean, listen. I was going over to San Francisco for the Super Bowl, right? So Kansas City won, right? I mean, and then they have no celebration. They say there was a freaking shootout. I mean, for no apparent reason.
Yep, I hear you, Ray. Definitely tragic. Should never have happened.
Well, like I said, I watched Super Bowl for 35 years, right? And every time I have a homecoming thing, early, I'm not going to say that it's not that long. But you know what I'm saying? And like, you're going, like, you know, like, 9 kids got shot. And one DJ who worked for Missouri got killed. I mean, you gotta be, you know, that yo man, that to me that is really tragic, man. That yo man, that's to be
absolutely
uncalled for.
Absolutely,
so, you know what I'm saying?
I agree.
So I also shout for the, you know what I'm saying, for the family members who lived in Missouri. I'm sorry for the condolences and. You know what I'm saying? Pray, man. You know, as I say, man, this whole year is going. This whole year just started. It's going crazy.
Yep, I agree, Ray, and I think you're absolutely right.
Right. So anyway, 100%. Back to the Dude Ranch. Back to the Dude Ranch. You talking about alternate universe series and stuff? I think they could pull it off.
I think so.
I didn't pull it off, but you know, it's gonna take some work to do that.
Absolutely.
And then you talking about the five from the Dorian War episode? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Emperor Giorgio has the Defiant from the Tholian Web episode in the Mirror Universe.
But it kind of seems the same thing in the episode with Enterprise when Captain Archie caught that ship too.
Yes, that's right. Captain Archer in the Mirror Universe went after that ship, yes.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. I think it's not the same thing like Captain Archer did when he took all, like, you know, from, NX-1 Enterprise, had warp speed, to like five warp speed. I mean, the Kansuka Enterprise only had it's up to 10. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of like me driving A2 Honda Civic, and I went forward in time and drive me a 2024 Honda Civic with much more power.
Right.
Right. So yep. Anyway, guys, the ET commercial this year, I mean, I'm bugging out one thing. I'm not playing the ape show. Yo, I thought they finished with that.
Right.
Called Kingdom Planet. I thought they finished with that.
No, they're not. They're going to have a movie coming out with that. That's what we're talking about.
And then you got Deadpool 3. I got to see that joint.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, but anyway, I want to say hi. Like, you know, I want to, you know, respond to everything else. I'm doing fine. Except this. The snow thing, but thank God next week I'm off next week. Thank God. With the reset next week. Thank God.
Yeah, you got hammered down there with snow.
What? Uncle Jim, we got hammered so much. Like, wasn't that Monday? Monday, when they closed all the schools down. Thank God for that. Like I said, the public school, right? I mean, Uncle Jim, if the school is open, I was still not going to work. Complete that.
Well, that's good, right? You got to stay safe. You got to keep yourself safe.
You know what I'm saying? So anyway, guys, I just want to say hi. Enjoy your guys' night. I'll call you guys next Thursday. Enjoy your guys' night. You know what I'm saying? God bless and everything else. And thank you for having me on the show. And I'll tell Eva you say hi to her.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ray. You have a good night, brother. Bye-bye.
You too, man. They come every day. Thank you. All right. God bless.
Okay, guys. That was Ray. He's down in the Bronx. And I think J-Dog is back with us here. I think that's J-Dog's number. J-Dog,
yep.
Can you hear us?
Of course. Yep. Hi.
All right.
Hi.
We got J-Dog. So that was Ray down in the Bronx. And now we got J-Dog in Albany. And we're talking about Section 31 and the possibility of Lorca maybe making a cameo appearance, which I think would be excellent myself.
I forget the name of the actor.
Jason
Isaac.
Yep.
Yeah, Jason, thank you. That he said only if there was a very good story or that it would really be something that would attract his attention, that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, I think getting him like Giorgio for an extended series might be difficult, but for a movie, I think it's a different situation, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad that, you know, that you're doing on the topic of Section 31. Because it makes me wonder, for example, that, so here we are, in our time, that we have all the intelligence agencies and all, and all the crap that today of how the world is, and things are supposed to be better, right, over the next 100 years through first contact, you know, the World War III, et cetera, all this stuff. And it's supposed to, if you want to look at it like level the playing field for Earth, right, until first contact. And supposedly we're supposed to be better people. So I think that one of the things, in my opinion, that was a mistake was that Roddenberry made it so that we're perfect, which I think is totally ridiculous. I mean, why couldn't it be just like we're a work in progress thing? You know, And, I mean, especially that with Archer and the time, you know, in that 22nd century, they were more like us. Okay. But the thing of it is that, so they got rid of war, famine, et cetera, et cetera. And even though they didn't have replicators, but they were able still to make progress to satisfy people's wants and needs. But still, Earth, even though it was getting united and they thought that they would get over all the bullshit and all the nastiness, but why is Section 31 there? Why is it, how did it, I mean, I'm sure that it was around even before, you know, with Starfleet that we see in Enterprise, right? I mean, were people so like, I can't, you know, do this? You saw, like, with that with Cisco, that, ooh, we can't touch our, get our hands involved in doing certain things because we're too high and mighty and, you know, so we've got to have somebody to do it for us. But, I mean, did they set up this organization? I mean, it's not a perfect universe. I mean, shit's going to happen, right? I mean, is this what Section 31 is about? Is it the shit's going to happen, we have to handle it, agency? So they need to have them. Is that what it's about? We need to have Section 31.
They're kind of like,
what do
the
you got?
Black of Star Trek.
They're the, you do the shit work, because we can't afford to soil ourselves with, you know, this, we're too high and mighty. As compared to, like, let's say, I don't know, Babylon 5, that they didn't set them up to be people who were perfect, right?
And they had the Psycorps with Bester as well.
They were nasty. I mean, they were nasty. I mean, holy cow. But, I mean, in general, though, in the Babylon 5 universe, they're not seen as perfect human beings, right? They still have religion. They still have a lot of the shit that we have today. So, you know, I think, I mean, look at how Cisco agonized. You know, it's like Romulus had to come in. They were just going to sit on the side because they knew that Starfleet was not going to, you know, tell them, you know, you've got to be, you know, they needed Section 31 and they needed people to do the dirty work that even Starfleet Intelligence wouldn't do, right?
I think what
Absolutely.
I'm hearing you say is that Section 31 at its core is an end justifies the means type of organization. So they set out for a goal and they're going to do whatever it takes to get there. Now, I think one thing that you mentioned is, you know, Starfleet sends Section 31 to do this and that. That's not at all true. Section 31 is an autonomous organization making their own decisions. And if they liaise with Starfleet at all, it's, I bet, at Section 31's purview and not Starfleet's. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they pretty much do what they want to do.
I think so. So Starfleet knows that they exist and they allow them to exist. Right?
Yeah.
To do that dirty work, but they don't control the dirty work that they do.
They're a loose gun.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least that's what they want us to believe. I mean, they could be controlled by another secret organization that Starfleet may have had that we never heard about that could mention in Section 31.
I mean, that's
Section
the thing
32,
is that,
you know?
No, you're totally
Section
right.
Section 31 and a half.
Yeah, and these all mirror real-life things, right? There's always intelligence and counterintelligence in these sorts of things. And as for the origins of Section 31, like, we don't really know. We know from Enterprise that Malcolm Reed worked for Section 31 before the series started. So we know that it goes back at least before the Enterprise series.
Right.
You know, I would say that, I don't know if you've watched, I'm going to minor spoiler alert here, Charles, and I'm sorry, but it's not that big of a thing. But, like, you know, anytime you go out into space, for example, in that show For All Mankind these days, anytime you go out into space, you're always going to take either a part of your military or a part of your secret organization or, you know, somebody who's going to operate quasi-militarily along the way. And that's just, to me, that's sort of like a human nature thing. It's like we take our scientists and we take our families and stuff, but, man, we take the guns, too. So
Jim and I have been watching For All Mankind. I love that series.
Yeah, and I would bet you that, you know, there was military and Section 31 and all that kind of stuff on every single ship that we sent out into the cosmos, I would bet you, in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I bet you're right. I bet you're right.
I bet they could even retcon it that, like, there was a Section 31 member on the Enterprise D or something, right?
Tosh Riyadh.
Well,
it would
I mean,
be interesting.
Have...
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead,
Jerry.
It would be interesting to actually get to the origins of, okay, so, like, let's say after World War III, all the shit we went through, right? You know, it's like, okay, we've gotten rid of hunger, disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jealousy, all this shit. I mean, not that we're perfect. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Roddenberry in this perfect universe, no, sorry, bullshit. Even in the original series, people were not perfect. Okay, fine. But still, was it felt that they did need to have a Section 31? Like, I don't know. Like, at the after warp drive or whatever. I don't know. Was it as far back as then, you know, when all the ashes, you know, the picking up the pieces of civilization, whatever. So did they feel we're going to need this type of organization? You know, it sucks, but we got to have something to do the shit that we normally would not do because we don't want to do the terrible things that we did in the past. But somebody's got to do it. I mean, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Good question. I don't know. I don't know how much they're going to be able to explore in a short 2-hour movie. I think.
Do we know it's exactly 2 hours, or if it's like?
No, I'm just making that up. I have no idea. Like Eric said, it is a streaming thing, and like, you know, from Game of Thrones and stuff that, or even For All Mankind, that when they're streaming it, they can make it whatever length they want. You know, they don't have to have commercial breaks and all that other garbage.
Oh, so
they,
this isn't going to be in the movie theater?
No, it's going to be on Paramount Plus.
Oh, so is it like a mini TV series? Because I always thought it was going to be in the theaters.
No, it's going to be on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
Yeah, Paramount
it's
Plus.
Also,
so,
okay.
You know.
I don't know if you've been reading the interviews with Ron Moore about For All Mankind, but there have been some, he's been alluding to something about the show, where it will end up. Is it going to be tying into the Star Trek universe?
Well, they did mention, the one astronaut did mention that she wanted her daughter to grow up to be a Trekkie, and they were going to watch all three series. She did say that. There was an awful lot of Star Trek mentioned in that show. But listen, guys, before we don't want to run out of time because we still got some more stuff to talk about. So I wanted
to go
around the room here and get everybody's, you know, we'll start off with Charles. So, Charles, what would you like to see Section 31? Where would you like to see it be, and what would you like to see it do?
I'd like to see it do something that's an influence to Star Trek history in some way. I just don't want it going back to Discovery era just because that's where it started. I want them to see do something and maybe explain why Ash Tyler's not there.
Yeah. So I think I could be wrong here because I'm not a temporal mechanics expert by any means, but I would think that she would have to go back beyond Discovery, because if she doesn't, she could run into herself, and that could cause all kinds of problems, like Doc Brown said. So I think that she would either have to go, you know, way beyond Discovery or after it, because she can't run into herself, right? I you know, although we've seen people from the Mirror Universe interact with them, with their normal selves, but I just think that would be too confusing. I think she has to go before Discovery season one or after, you know, the TNG era, I think, but I might be wrong. How about you, David? What would you like to see happen with this movie?
Well, for sure, definitely. I mean, we already know that there's going to be calls, the time traveler gate person thingy. So she's definitely going back in time somewhere. We don't know where. However, I think it would be interesting if she got sent back before Starfleet became Starfleet. What if, and I'm not saying this is what I want to see, but what if she was responsible for World War III, you know, for the instance of just kind of like having the, But yeah, I mean, to me, it's just an interesting thought to think that what if going back in time, maybe it was a mess up and she somehow got sent back to before World War III to try to get back. But, you know, maybe there's going to be like an instance of that. Or to me, be honest, this is what I want to see. I kind of want to see what happened between the 100 years difference between Enterprise and TOS. I kind of want to see something new. I'm with Eric and Paul on this. I do want to see something new with this series. So if they could put in something new into that timeline, that would be interesting to see.
And I know that Emperor Giorgio isn't the one that starts Section 31. Maybe like J-Dog was saying, maybe we are going to see the origin. Maybe he sends her back and she's the one that sets it up. I mean, we don't know, right?
Yeah.
Could be. How about you, Eric?
Well, I sort of said my piece. I mean, I kind of like the idea going into that 80-year gap between TOS and TNG. I'd like to see it in that zone.
Yeah, that's a good place. And Lorca. I'd love to see Lorca.
That's a great idea. I think that's very interesting. Yeah.
Lorca and his diapers.
I'm game for that. How about you, Paul?
Well, man, I want it to be a legit spy show, right? I want it to really feel like a spy genre movie, right? Like 3 Days of the Condor type situation, right? Where it's suspenseful and there is duplicity and I don't know who to trust. And who I'm rooting for changes midway through, right? I want to see a lot of Michelle Yeoh. I would love to see some Lorca, like he talked about. You know, it's an interesting idea to think that, you know, they could be sending her back and she's like somehow the genesis of starting this whole thing, you know, the foundational, you know, era of Section 31. But that's a lot of story to unpack, man. So I don't know if we're getting that. I just hope they continue to do what Star Trek does when it's Star Trek at its best, is hold a mirror up to our world we live in now, and that they use the story to make, you know, good commentary about what we do with our spycraft and intelligence in the world that we live in now, and hold it up as a warning to where we kind of maybe shouldn't be going in terms of some of the stuff that we do, right? We want to make sure that we continue to, you know, lean towards freedom and not autocracy and becoming the next KGB. So I think it has the potential to really speak to us where we're at and where we might be cautious that we go in the future. But just, I want a good spy story, man. I want it to feel a little bit different and not just feel like a, you know, season two episode of Discovery. That's my hope.
Yeah. Well, I think, like you alluded to earlier, I think Michelle Yeoh, the Oscar-winning Michelle Yeoh, has the opportunity to look at the scripts and give approval. And I don't think that, you know, she would approve something and work on something if it wasn't legitimately good. You know, I think that that's what she's after. So I
especially
I think
coming right off that Oscar win, man. I mean, she signed up for this show after, I mean, within a, you know, what, a few days after winning the Oscar. So her coinage has never been higher. So I'm thinking that they must have really, you know, she must have been pleased, because it's like you don't announce your next project after just walking away with the Oscar unless you feel really good about that project, right? So and she was very prominently part of the advertising and announcement that it was going to be a go production. So I think that, you know, she seems like she's really standing behind it, which is a great sign. So super hopeful.
Wasn't it also her idea to do a show like this? I kept thinking I heard something like that.
Well,
I think she digs that character, man. She loves that character. I think she would, you know,
yeah.
She said she'd happily would embody it again. And I think she likes the fact that it's not like a stock character, right? That it's it's a complicated character with a lot of shades of gray, and she likes getting a chance to be evil every now and then, right? So I think that that's an actor's dream. So I think she's very happy with it, and I love it when an actor guides, you know, kind of takes ownership of their character and they kind of guide its development through, you know, subsequent shows. Look at what Patrick Stewart did, right? And kind of said, you know, helps, you know, direct it a little bit in terms of what they do with the character, because it shows that they really care, and that always translates in the performance, I think. So I'm excited to see where she takes this. You know, definitely hopeful, super hopeful.
Yeah, I agree. And how about you, J-Dog? What would you like to see them do with Section 31?
I am on board with all of you with what you're wanting to see, because as was pointed out, that, yes, Star Trek at its best, the mirror holding up to a, you know. So, yeah.
All right. So, guys.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, that wraps up our Section 31 discussion for this episode, guys. I hope you had a good time, and I hope you learned something, and I hope that we opened up your mind to possibilities that maybe you didn't think about with Section 31. And now it's time for our Star Trek birthday.
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys, we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by, sadly enough, remembering those members of our Star Trek family who are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric. Take it away, Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we have a lot of remembrances. We're going to cruise through them a little bit, but these are all extremely important actors who have made great contributions to Star Trek through the years, and we like to honor them every single week. So the first this week is actor Gene Lyons. Gene Lyons, of course, played Ambassador Robert Fox in the TOS episode A Taste of Armageddon. Gene Lyons basically made a career out of being a professional guest star, was in all sorts of stuff from the 50s through the 70s. So happy birthday and lots of love going out to Gene Lyons. Happy birthday as well to Dame Judith Anderson, lived to be the ripe old age of 94 years old. She's the Australian actress who played T'Lar in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, our Vulcan priestess, one of only 14 Star Trek guest stars born in the 19th century, of course, but she's known for so many things, has won Emmy Awards, Tony Awards, was nominated for Grammy Awards, Academy Awards, an extremely important character in all of British theater and television. In 1960, she was appointed as a Dame of the British Empire after her service as an actor of stage and screen. So I cannot overstate the importance of this woman and her career. Happy birthday to Dame Judith Anderson. Happy birthday as well to Barry Ingham. Barry Ingham was the actor who played Danilo O'Dell in the Next Generation second season episode Up the Long Ladder. Ingham was one of those who was originally considered for the role of Jean-Luc Picard, which is pretty interesting. And if you'll beg my indulgence, he was also one of the very few actors who also appeared in Doctor Who. He was in an episode, and he was also in the movie Doctor Who and the Daleks. So Barry Ingham, veteran of both Star Trek and Doctor Who, happy birthday, and lots of remembrances going out to him. Happy birthday as well to Paul Comey, the actor who played Lieutenant Stiles, Speak of the Devil, in the TOS first season episode Balance of Terror, one of the best. Comey started acting in 1957 and continued all the way to 1995, making 100 television guest appearances, 20 movies, and a number of reoccurring roles. So happy birthday to Paul Comey. Happy birthday to Brioni Farrell, a Greek actress born Xenia Grestos. She played Tula in the TOS first season episode, The Return of the Archons. Once again, television career in the 60s and 70s, lots and lots of guest appearances. So happy birthday, Brioni. Happy birthday to Richard Lynch. He's the actor from Brooklyn, New York, who portrayed Arctis Baran in the Next Generation seventh season episodes Gambits Part 1 and 2. He's also the older brother of Star Trek Next Generation guest star Barry Lynch, who played the Romulan Empire member Deceive in the episode six season, season six episode, Face of the Enemy. So happy birthday to Richard Lynch, who has many connections to Star Trek through himself and his family. Happy birthday as well to the wonderful Susan Oliver. That was the stage name of Charlotte Girk, a New York native who played Vina, the original Vina, in the TOS first season pilot, The Cage, the one that we didn't get to see till later. She was also one of the test actresses for that Orion makeup. They slathered her up good. They tried many, many things on me, she said, until they finally found what they wanted. Years later, she also wanted to direct an episode of Next Generation, but never got the chance, and I always like to mention this on her birthday. The response was that she didn't know enough about visual effects. This despite the fact that a knowledge of visual effects was not a director's requirement for the series. Kind of some funny stuff going on in there. You should go read about it if you want to learn more. But Oliver did receive an Emmy Award nomination for her performance in NBC's 1976 television movie Amelia Earhart. So happy birthday to Susan Oliver, our original Vina. Happy birthday as well to Margaret Gillespie Wiley, Meg, also known as. She's the actress who played our original Talosian, the Keeper, from the first pilot of TOS. She had the honor of portraying our first villain, I guess you'd say, and over five decades would make around 100 television guest appearances in all sorts of things, you know, The Twilight Zone, Fugitive, all that stuff from there. So Meg Wiley, really important part of Star Trek there, and a cool throbbing head that you can watch when you watch The Cage. So happy birthday to her. And last but certainly not least, we're saying happy birthday this week to Jerry Goldsmith. Gerald King Goldsmith was the film and television composer and conductor who wrote the musical scores for five Star Trek movies and the main title themes for two Star Trek spinoff series. And you want to talk about accolades? He was nominated for 18 Academy Awards. He won one. Also won five Emmy Awards, was nominated for the 1980 Saturn Award for Best Music for the TMP soundtrack. And he was actually Gene Roddenberry's original choice to compose the music for The Cage, but he had to decline because he was committed to other projects at the time, and that's how Alexander Courage got that first shot at that theme. In 1979, Roddenberry again offered a first shot to Goldsmith for TMP. Of course, he took him up on it. And his score for that movie earned him the 11 of his 18 Oscar nominations, which I think is pretty cool. Just goes to show how important that was. Also Star Trek V, Jim. Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Also, he was approached by Paramount to do the DS9 theme, but he didn't get it because he had other things going on, once again, in his schedule. But he did do Star Trek Voyager, and then we, of course, saw him later in First Contact, Insurrection, and Nemesis. So somebody whose imprint is all over Star Trek, when we think Star Trek, we literally think about these themes. We're literally thinking about things that came from Jerry Goldsmith's head. And I just think that is really super cool. And I miss him. And, you know, I, of course, never got to meet him or anything, but man, what a talent. What a real, real talent. Gone 20 years now. Lost him back in 2004. So that does it for our remembrances, guys. So, Charles, I'm going to pass this birthday candle to you.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Let's start off with a happy birthday to Jimmy Bennett, actor who played the adolescent James T. Kirk in Star Trek, the Kelvin series. He was born in Seal Beach, California. Happy birthday to Philip and Glim, who betrayed Burrell Antos in Star Trek Deep Space Nine and the Mirror Universe, Burrell Antos in the sixth season, Resurrection. Happy birthday to Stephen Gregory, actor who played Jake Kirkland in Star Trek's Next Generation episode, Coming of Age. Happy birthday to Ellen Bray, actress from New York City, New York, who played Farallon in Star Trek's sixth season episode, Quality of Life. Happy birthday to Frank Collinson, actor who played Dalak in Star Trek's Next Generation fifth season episode, Ensign Row. Happy birthday to Nicole Fellows, actress who played Elizabeth Torres in Star Trek Voyager 7th season episode, Lineage. And a couple of special birthdays in there. A very happy birthday to Andrew J. Robinson, actor who was best known Star Trek fans for portraying Elam Garrick in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Definitely a character, fascinating character who didn't get as much screen time and enough background, I think, that he deserved.
And Charles, you and I both know another excellent example of an author reading his own book with a stitch in time and just doing a fantastic performance.
Exactly. That really gave us a good backstory for him. And Jim knows this one's a special one for me. A very happy birthday to Kirk Thatcher, who was an associate producer in Star Trek IV, Voyage Home, but we know him much more as playing the part of the punk on the bus in that movie, who actually sang an original song he wrote himself for that movie. And also, I believe he voiced another character, and I can't remember which one it was. He voiced another character in that movie, too. In 2022, he returned as a character in Star Trek Picard series episode, The Watcher. But Kirk is a very interesting person with stuff he's done, and I believe he's spent some time to do some work with the Muppets. So I'd love to get a little more into his history in Hollywood. Paul, who's on your list?
Paul is muted.
Sorry
Paul?
For the delay there, gentlemen.
There we go.
Appreciate
no problem.
That patience. Thank you so much. First of all, we've got happy birthday greetings from Mariana Hill. She's the actress from the original series episode Dagger of the Mind, who played Helen Noel, a famous companion of the captain from an infamous Christmas party, as I recall. So terrific role, would have made a great regular character, as far as I'm concerned. But Mariana Hill, happy birthday and a great performance, really charming. Also, we're saying happy birthday to Julie Warner, who played Christy Henshaw in the Next Generation third season episodes Booby Trap and Transfigurations. A double hitter there for Julie Warner, getting to be in two different episodes. Happy birthday to Marcello Tuber, who portrayed Akash Jared in Next Generation's fourth season episode Devil's Due, as well as playing Mr. Alvarez in the Picard second season episode Assimilation. So a couple of different aspects of the Trek universe there. Happy birthday to Catherine Burrell, actress who played Harcourt Fenton Mudd's fiance Stella Grimes in the Trek Discovery first season episode Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. Fun stuff from season one of Discovery. Always fun to revisit. Happy birthday to Leslie Beavis. She played Rianoge in the Deep Space Nine second and third and fourth season episodes Homecoming, The Abandoned, and Broken Link. This actor is somebody you've seen in a ton of TV, actor Neil McDonough, who played Lieutenant Hawk in First Contact.
Wait. Leslie Beavis. The most important thing about her is that Snotty beamed her twice last night, and it was marvelous.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she was in Spaceballs.
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. Glad we got that out. That's good.
I forgot about that.
She was, she was in Spaceballs.
I'll have to revisit that.
Yeah, she was in Spaceballs.
Okay.
Star Trek reference.
Awesome.
It's not beaming her.
Yeah, Neil McDonough was really interesting. He played Lieutenant Hawk in First Contact. He's a TV vet. You've seen him in tons and tons of different things. Very charismatic with those kind of Siberian husky eyes of his. Really seemed like they were setting him up to be a recurring character. And then surprisingly, he bought the farm. Not so much. But interesting bit of casting in one of the best Trek movies, certainly there. Happy birthday to Harish Vajdani, a Persian-Canadian actress who played Katil in Strange New Worlds first season episode Spock Amok. Absolutely great episode. Happy birthday to Sherry Jackson, who played Andrea in the original series first season episode What Are Little Girls Made Of? Outstanding episode. Indelible performance. Sherry Jackson, amazing. And speaking of beaming, we have Simon Pegg, the great English actor, writer, and comedian, who's also enjoying a birthday, who we acknowledge for playing Montgomery Scott in Star Trek Into Darkness, Star Trek, and Star Trek Beyond, and is a big staunch science fiction enthusiast and done some writing for the franchise as well. So pretty good stuff there amongst all of our Star Trek luminaries. Happy birthday, Simon Pegg. Passing it over to you, Jim.
Yeah, I'm going to start off with one of my favorites. We want to say happy birthday to, the Gorn captain himself, from the TOS episode Arena. Of course, we're talking about Bobby Clark. Happy birthday, Bobby Clark. We also want to say happy birthday to Jamie Hubbard, the actress who played Salia in Star Trek The Next Generation second season episode, The Dauphine. That was Wesley's girlfriend, human girlfriend, human appearing girlfriend. We also want to say happy birthday to Stephen Manley, the actor who played Spock at age of 17 in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. We want to say happy birthday to Alan Miller, the actor from Brooklyn, New York, who played the alien character captain in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. He's the guy that spoke Yoda-ese to McCoy in the bar.
Yoda-ese.
Is that what you would call it?
Yeah, no, totally. I think that's a good description. Yeah.
You are known. My name, not important. He kind of, in the world of Star Trek, he would be Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
So happy birthday. We also want to say happy birthday to Zach Galligan. He's the actor who played David Gentry in Star Trek Voyager's fifth season episode, In the Flesh. But you guys, everybody knows this guy from Gremlins, right? Keep them out of the daylight. Don't get them wet and never feed them after midnight. Gremlins, I think, is what he's most well-known for. And I always, always, always save the Klingons for last. And tonight is no exception to that rule. We want to say kapla to Nancy Youngblunt, who played Kalana in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, seventh season episode, Once More Unto the Breach. We also want to say kapwa to Christopher Darga, actor and sculptor who appeared as K-Bok in Star Trek Deep Space Nine's fourth season episode, Way of the Warrior, and Vorok in Star Trek Enterprise first season episode, The Unexpected. You guys remember K-Bok? K-Bok is the one that Gowron had killed because he wouldn't board Yates' ship, and he brings his Zaktan, gives it to Sisko.
Yep.
That was K-Bok, that captain. And last but definitely not least on my list, we want to say happy birthday and kapla to Matthias Hughes, the actor who played Klingon General Stitt in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. And that, my friends, wraps up our Star Trek birthdays. And now it's time for Star Trek News.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Okay, guys, this is our Star Trek news section, and we have something hot off the presses that just dropped today, and Eric is going to tell you guys all about it.
That's right. Looking forward to the future of Star Trek here. Star Trek Discovery Season 5 to debut with two episodes on April 4th. That's right. Paramount Plus announced that Season 5 of Discovery will arrive on Thursday, April 4th, with a two-episode debut. New episodes of the 10-episode season will follow each Thursday on Paramount Plus in the U.S., the U.K., Switzerland, South Korea, Latin America, Germany, France, Italy, Australia, and Austria. Discovery will also premiere on April 4th on Paramount Plus in Canada. Returning for Season 5 are Sonequa Martin-Green, Doug Jones, Anthony Rapp, Mary Wiseman, Wilson Cruz, David Ajala, and Blue Del Barrio. Callum Keith Rennie joins the cast as Captain Rayner. Season 5 also features recurring guest stars Elias Tufexis, who plays La'ok, and Eve Harlow, who plays Maul. The fifth and final season will find Captain Burnham and the crew of the USS Discovery uncovering a mystery that will send them on an epic adventure across the galaxy to find an ancient power whose very existence has been deliberately hidden for centuries. But there are others on the hunt as well, dangerous foes who are desperate to claim the prize for themselves and will stop at nothing to get it. Captain Burnham and the USS Discovery are sent to retrieve a mysterious 800-year-old Romulan vessel until the artifact hidden inside is stolen, leading to an epic chase. Meanwhile, Saru is offered the position of a lifetime, and Tilly's efforts to help pull her into a tangled web of secrecy. The hit Paramount Plus original series Star Trek Discovery prepares to embark on its fifth and final season in April. Since its debut in 2017, Discovery has earned widespread acclaim for its dedication to diversity and for redefining the Star Trek franchise for a new generation. The show's unique strength lies not only in its captivating narrative and award-winning world-building, but also in the groundbreaking representation it brings to the forefront. As the lead of the series, Sonequa Martin-Green made history as the first black woman to helm a Star Trek series, and the last season broke additional barriers as she became the captain of the series' main starship, the USS Discovery. The show boasts an ethos of inclusivity, also blazing trails in LGBTQIA+ representation, in sci-fi storytelling, and in TV in general, featuring the first on-screen intergalactic same-sex couple, as well as multidimensional non-binary and trans characters. This final season will see our beloved crew embarking on a new adventure and celebrating the show's bold storytelling over its past four seasons as it continues to honor Star Trek's legacy of infinite diversity in infinite combinations. Star Trek Discovery Season 1 through Season 4 are currently streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus in all those countries we mentioned. Season 2 and 3 are also available on the Pluto TV Star Trek channel in Switzerland, Germany, and Austria. In Canada, the series airs on Bell Media's CTV Sci-Fi channel. Star Trek Discovery is distributed by Paramount Global Content Distribution. So we get a two-part opener on April 4th. We have a bit of a plot summary here, which gives us a little bit of information, but not really too many spoilers or anything. We know there's some important stuff that's going to happen, but I'm very curious about this 800-year-old Romulan vessel, because you'll remember, guys, when we went from our time period in Discovery of the 2250s, we shot ahead almost 900 years. It was like 913 years or something. I can't remember the exact count anymore. But that means that the Romulan vessel that we see is from 100 years beyond Discovery time. And we know what that time period is, right? That's our TNG years. So kind of exciting. There's going to be a little bit of TNG Discovery crossover would be my guess. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I, for one, it's a bittersweet ending for me because I love Discovery. And I'm not afraid to say it. It's one of my favorite Star Trek series, just for the reasons you just mentioned. You know, I think next to TOS, Discovery is the cherry on the top of the sundae. And I'm very sad to see it go. And 10 episodes, it sounds like a lot, but it's going to fly right by. So and two episodes on one night, I don't like that. That's just going to make it end quicker. So, you know, I don't know. I'm really sad to see it go. I hope they replace it with something equally as good. So, yeah, we'll see. But you're right. It's going to be a Romulan ship from TNG era-ish. So that's going to be exciting to see how they tie that together. Maybe they'll find some DNA from Sela or something, you know?
Yeah, maybe. And they have released the names of all the episodes, so if you guys would like to go out there and find those are available out there. But they've I try not to look at them too much because I don't want too much of a clue, but so I'm not going to read them on the air. But if you want to go look at the episode names, go check them out. They're out there. All 10 episodes have titles available for you to read. So there you go.
Yeah, and Paul isn't here, so Charles, you want to jump in and do Paul's story? Or David?
Charles is muted, maybe. So maybe David.
Charles is muted.
David, there we go, Charles.
Cooking. David's cooking, so.
Okay, so go, Charles.
All right.
Star Trek Prodigy is the purest Trek of the modern era and not just for kids. With all the Star Trek shows currently in production on the air, like Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, and Lower Decks, Prodigy seems like a show to skip. It's Star Trek for kids. The show is accessible to all, but not just longtime Star Trek fans. The show eases fresh audiences into the Star Trek universe. Prodigy works wonderfully given that it strips down what Star Trek is to its core and introduces it to a new cast of characters from the ground up. As the new characters learn about Star Trek, Starfleet, and the Federation, so does an uninitiated audience. It's a great way to get new fans into the franchise. Similar to Star Trek Discovery, which took its story well into the future to avoid messing with any canonical stories set in the Star Trek universe, Prodigy does the same thing similar. Taking place way on the other side of the galaxy, Star Trek Prodigy Season 1 suddenly removes itself from the major universe for the most part of the season. Season 1 explores the unknown part of the galaxy, which brings the crew towards a more familiar. The Janeway hologram is seemingly our only connection to the known Star Trek franchise in the beginning, but the story barrels towards a larger threat that affects the entire Federation. Star Trek Prodigy Season 1 uses characters who were less fortunate, survivors in need of a better life. Characters who were oppressed, alone, and dealing with their own personal traumas. This ensemble cast is how Prodigy characters are able to remain existing and their new fans of what Star Trek is meant to be. Hope for a better future. And it's the reasoning with our Prodigy crew are seeking out Starfleet, hoping to be part of a cause and get a better life from the ones they left behind. It's a beautiful way to remind audiences what the promises of a bright future means to those who are without hope. And at the end of the day, the ultimate of what Roddenberry intended. Definitely wholeheartedly, it is a good series, and it's a different series. It gives us brand new characters, except for Janeway. We pretty much start off with a brand new set of characters, and we eventually get back to Starfleet. But it's a series worth looking into.
We don't know yet exactly when season two is going to drop. Aaron Walke didn't really have any information on that to give us when we had him on the show. So we're just going to have to sit and wait. But you can catch it on Netflix, which is, yeah, that's the home of Star Trek. Paramount Plus is not the home for Prodigy. So you guys can catch Prodigy season one right now on Netflix in its entirety. Season two, which is 20 episodes. We don't know when that's going to drop or even how, if they're going to drop it all at once or how they're going to do it. But Prodigy season two is done and will be here soon. Does anybody have any, has anybody heard anything as to when that might be?
No, nope.
Because I don't know.
No, nope. they haven't.
2024.
Yeah. There hasn't been any more than that.
Yeah. So it's going to be sometime this year, but we don't know when. You know what? I just had a terrible thought. You know what would really be really bad is if they dropped Prodigy at the same time as Discovery. That would stink.
Even though it's being distributed by Netflix, I mean, it's still a Paramount production, right? So, I mean, the only reason that Netflix would do that would be to be to try and be in competition with Paramount Plus, I guess, with their own franchise. That feels like something that just wouldn't happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's after Discovery. That way we can have the adequate time to talk about it and not have to cram a lot into one podcast, because I hate when they do that.
Guys,
so
do you remember that stretch where we had continuous Star Trek for like a year? It was amazing.
Yes, the golden age of Star Trek.
The golden age.
We will never see that again. That doesn't seem like it. We had like, 50 consecutive weeks of new Star Trek every single week. We got spoiled.
Cool.
40 some weeks.
Yeah, it was mid 40s.
40 some weeks.
Yeah, it was good.
Yep. It was a great stretch there for a little while. All right, guys. So I think we have time for one more quick story here. So Star Trek's greatest hero isn't a human and isn't even in Starfleet. When you think of Star Trek's most honorable heroes, your first thoughts probably go to the various captains like Kirk and Picard. And if you're a fan with a particularly good memory, maybe Rachel Garrett. But what about non-humans? Easy. There's Spock, Dax, Worf, Kira, Data, Una Chin Riley. The list goes on and on and on. Star Trek's actual greatest hero wasn't a human, but also was never involved in Starfleet. All you have to do is think back to the brilliant Star Trek movie, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and the Klingon Chancellor Gorkon. So what exactly makes Gorkon Star Trek's most worthy hero? Three factors. Primarily, first, Gorkon finds the courage and conviction to set aside his own prejudice and that of his species in order to create peace for future generations. Gorkon sees a bigger picture, something that forces him to acknowledge and come to terms with his own past failings and the violent history of his species. Then there's Gorkon's sacrifice. His mission for peace comes at great personal expense and leads to his own death. This was a risk he would have recognized right from the beginning, but he remained resolute throughout and undeterred by the prospect of treacherous plots from those surrounding him. Finally, you have the impact of Gorkon's actions. In the TNG episode Yesterday's Enterprise, alternate timeline where war is once again broken out between the Klingons and the Federation, leading to the death of billions. this or another war like it would undoubtedly have begun again in the prime timeline had Gorkin not carry out his mission. The signing of the Kittimer Accords saved an unimaginable number of lives and was a direct consequence of Gorkin's actions and sacrifice. It's time to put some respect to his name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, probably one of the most honorable Klingons that we've ever seen, right? Like, the guy put his own... In fact, the thing that is really remarkable about him is he's one of the few Klingons that we see who isn't a freaking racist. Like, he actually approaches conversations with openness, and he actually has some diplomatic tendencies, and he's actually able to hold a conversation. But I do think that he's not any less Klingon for it, right? Because he acts with honor. He approaches his own death, although he knows it's coming, I think, with honor and bravery. And I'm absolutely positive that he ends up in Stovacor at the end of the day. And what was cool was that, you know, remember when he died, we get his daughter taken over as chancellor. Azitbur takes over, right? And until we learned about Laurel, we actually thought that maybe she was the first woman, but she, of course, clearly not the first woman chancellor of the Klingon Empire. But I just love his character so much. I always wanted him to have a really, really good card in Star Trek Attack Wing. He's got a card, but it's not that great.
Yeah, I never got to meet David Warner. Of course, he was in the best Star Trek movie ever, Star Trek V, as St. John Talbert, and he was in Tron. He's been in a lot of great stuff, but I never got a chance to meet him. He was in Chain of Command. He was the Cardassian that interrogates Picard.
I mean, his Cardassian portrayal is creepy, is really, really, like, he's such a good actor. It just really, you come through and you're absolutely terrified of this guy.
Yeah, he was awesome. I wish I had got a chance to meet him, but yeah, I agree. I think Gorkon, I think he is the definitive character. I think he shaped everything, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
know,
he's the,
you know?
Well, and what's cool is I feel like Star Trek VI did a really good job. I mean, we've talked about Star Trek VI on the podcast before, but it does an awesome job of being a springboard of how did the Federation get from the TOS era to the TNG era. So we were just talking about that tonight, you know, and what we'd like to see Section 31 cover. Well, Gorkon is literally the springboard of those next 80 years and what the universe looks like, and the kind of friendship and like cooperation between the Klingon Empire and the Federation.
Absolutely. It sets the tone for the future for sure. All right, guys. Well, that wraps up our show, believe it or not. So I want to say thank you to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us. And thank you to David, and thank you to J-Dog for calling. And of course, thank you to Ray for calling us from the Bronx.
You're welcome.
Up there's David. He's back. I thought you were cooking, David.
I got done just now.
Oh, you just got done? All right. Well, thank you for joining us in Trek Talking with us, David.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And thank you so much to Eric for hanging out with us tonight as well.
Yeah, you bet, guys. Thanks. This is always a blast.
And thank you to Charles for hanging out in Trek Talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you. Always a lot of fun.
And just to let you guys know, next week we're gonna go off the beaten path a little bit, and we're gonna talk about one of those forgotten
polarizing,
episodes, or often
polarizing,
skipped over episodes. One of the fast forward episodes. I don't know what you want to call it, but a lesser discussed episode. We're gonna talk about the empath. And,
the quick episode.
You know, when I was thinking, what can we talk about? What haven't we talked about? And I realized we never talked about the empath. And then I started looking, and not a lot of podcasts talk about the empath. So guess what? Trek Talk is going to tackle the empath. So you guys can head over to our Facebook page and tell us what you thought about the empath and give us a score. Because next week we're going to tally up the fan scores, see what you guys thought about it, and see what we thought about it. So you might be surprised. That'll be next Thursday, same bat time, same bat channel. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying, please remember, Star Trek fans are the best fans. Be good to each other and stay safe. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Prepare to be emotional.
Live long and prosper.
Good night, y'all.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hello, you have reached the Q Continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.